Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Earfluence podcast. As we wind down 2021, we're going to share some of our favorite episodes from our clients that were recorded in our studio at Raleigh Founded. We'll share these episodes in December, then in January, we'll be back with new episodes of the Earfluence podcast. Okay, today we're sharing an episode of the Hustle and Gather podcast, hosted by sister serial entrepreneurs Courtney Hopper and Dana Cadwell. Now, Dana and Courtney like to keep episodes to right around 30 minutes, but in this interview with Jess Ekstrom, CEO of Headbands of Hope and author of Chasing the Bright Side, they completely lost track of time, and I think you'll see why.
Whatever it is that you're chasing, like the thing that you're going after, whether it's in your business, in your work, in your life, like a goal that you have, if your name was removed from it, if no one knew it was you, would it still matter?
Welcome everyone to Hustle and Gather, a podcast about inspiring the everyday entrepreneur to take the leap. I'm Dana.
I'm Courtney.
And we are two sisters who love business. On this show, we talk about the ups and downs of the hustle and the reward at the end of the journey.
And we know all the challenges that come with starting a business between operating our wedding venue, doing speaking and consulting, and starting our luxury wedding planning company. We wake up and hustle every day.
But we love what we do. And today we're talking with Jess Ekstrom, CEO of Headbands of Hope, author and speaker. Jess, welcome to Hustle and Gather.
Thanks for having me. Okay, I'm an idiot. I did not know you guys were sisters.
Oh yeah, we're sisters.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, wait, who's older?
It's me.
Really?
I know I look younger.
But are you taller?
I am.
Okay, yes. I'm the younger one, but the taller one too. I love rubbing it in my older sister's face.
Well, yeah. I was all fine. And like when we were like 12, I knew one day I was going to get my comeuppance because my whole life growing up, they're like, is this your older sister? And I was right. Like, no, height does not equate to age.
That
I was like,
was
one day when we're
life.
40, they're going to all think you're older. And someone one day asked if she was my mother. And it was like the best day of my life. But then recently, on my 40th birthday trip, someone asked me if she was my daughter. And I was like, what the hell?
I said, how old do you think I am? He goes, 20. And I was like, oh, you're my new best friend.
Yeah.
Add 17 years.
What the world?
That's awesome.
So now I feel like it's negated.
It is.
Yeah.
You can't say it anymore.
Well, my sister and I are complete opposites in the best way possible. But okay. I don't know if we could ever run a business together. Her business is like, it's called Burning Daylight Expeditions. And she takes people on like wilderness trips, like deep in the woods. And I'm like, let's do headbands and fashion, you know,
in a hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being here. I was telling you earlier is I've been like watching you on Facebook and Instagram and
awesome.
So
I'm so
you.
Glad. Yeah.
Yeah. Raleigh celebrity.
I know.
Well, I admire what you guys do because I have tried doing events and stuff in the past, whether it's for my business, and they are like, that's not my zone of genius. You know, there's some people that are like, love the chaos and the coordination of it. And I'm like, I could never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's more of a lifestyle than a job.
Yeah.
I think so. I definitely think it takes a certain personality for sure.
Yeah. I think
I'm not even saying I have it and I did it for a long time. It's not even my personality, really.
I'm definitely like, maybe I have trust issues or something because it's hard, like sometimes working with people that are like, okay, you're bringing the balloons, you know, and it's like you have to trust that they will bring the balloons. And it's, you know, been hard sometimes as an entrepreneur too. Mm-hmm. And I find that the more that I rely on my team and believe in them, the better that they'll do. But it's definitely a muscle that you have to train.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 100%. I do think that that's a really good point. I think that makes it easier while we could build our team much quicker because we were used to, even when it was just us, like we had to have a team to execute events and you had to trust that person was going to follow through.
You had to. Yeah. Or else you couldn't do your job well.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
That's a very a good point.
It is a good point. Yeah.
Well, let's dive into why you're an entrepreneur. So let's hear a little bit about your story because it is a pretty amazing one. Like how and why did you start Headbands of Hope?
So I started Headbands of Hope when I was in college. I was at NC State. And it was so funny. I literally walked in here. I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot my headband in the car. So usually I'm wearing
She's
one.
Not even wearing
if you're
headband.
Watching live, just imagine, you know, a beautiful headband on my head. And I was interning at Make-A-Wish. And when I was there, I was seeing a lot of kids that were losing their hair to chemotherapy and they'd be offered a wig or they'd be given a hat, something to cover up their heads. And a lot of them weren't really concerned with, you know, covering up their heads. They just wanted something to feel good about themselves after losing their hair. And so I would see them, you know, coming to the office or on their trips, like wearing these headbands. And I thought it was so like awesome that they just didn't care about covering it up. They just wanted to feel like a kid again. And so I remember a few weeks prior to that, Blake, the founder of Tom Shoes, who's not named Tom, spoke. Spoke at my school, and he was talking about how he started this one-for-one company, you know, giving shoes for every pair sold, and how he wanted more businesses to create, you know, business for good and for purpose, where you don't have to choose between being a nonprofit and a for-profit. Like, find a way to work giving back into your business model. And so that was kind of fresh on my mind. And I had looked up like on Google, like headbands for kids with cancer, and couldn't find anything. Mm-hmm. And so I call it like the dumbest, smartest moment of my life, where I was like, oh, I could do that. I'll just do what Blake did. And so I started Headbands of Hope. And for every headband sold, we donate one to a child with an illness. And it was not fire right out of the gate. Lots of trial and error in the beginning.
Yeah.
Now almost, I mean, we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary in April, which is crazy. But through that, I kind of realized about 3 or 4 years ago that the story of Headbands of Hope, the origin story, how I got started and the mistakes, was really like an impactful product in itself. And so I started writing and speaking, and then through that, realized that there's not a lot of women doing that. And so that kind of started my next business, which is Mic Drop Workshop, that helps women tell and sell their story through keynote speaking and writing books. So wild journey, but I've learned a lot and happy to talk about it.
Yeah, I love that.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So I could imagine like it was like probably hard and scary, like starting in college. So how'd you manage to get it all going? Like, I'm just thinking like supply chain.
Yeah.
And like, how do you scale this to be something that is something and not just you like hot gluing things on a brand you might find at Michael's?
Well, I definitely tried that.
You
it didn't work so well.
Yeah.
But I would say that it's like scarier now doing ideas than it was then, because when you're young, like you don't have any data,
that's
you know, you don't have any information, you don't have any like history or stories of like why things work or why things don't. Which on one hand, you're just kind of shooting from the hip and hoping something sticks. But on the other hand, it's like you're not paralyzed by, you know, all of like, what if this and what if that? So I wish I could tell you that it was like at the time I like really thought long and hard about it and like went back and forth in my head, but I didn't. I was just kind of like, great, let's do it. And now, like, you know, starting Mic Drop Workshop or starting, you know, I have an online journal app that I created called Bright Pages. And like, those felt scarier to me because one, I had more information of how hard things were. And two, once you've hit some level of success with something, you feel like your next thing has to be like, you know, I think people call it like sophomore syndrome. It's like the next one has to be even better, which can be really paralyzing sometimes. Yeah. But in college, I was fortunate enough to have a lot of resources at my disposal when you're a student. You know, I got my first logo from working with the bribing the graphic design class, you know, to make me a logo for a grade. I made my website by paying computer design students with like Chipotle burritos, and little by little, you know, things started to come together with Headbands of Hope.
So a masterclass in like efficiency.
Exactly.
And like how to get things done for nothing.
For some reason, I like college students, you know, and to this day, it's like the way to their heart is through food. So I would like find ways to like use food to get what I wanted. I remember I got Jimmy John's to donate like 100 Turkey Tom sandwiches for like a photo shoot for people to come out and like take photos of wearing headbands. I'm like, this is the way to, this is my currency of choice is, you know, Jimmy John's sandwiches.
I know we had a podcast, I don't know, a couple months ago, and she was talking about, she's a marketer, and she was talking about how when you don't have money, you're super creative.
Oh,
like,
totally.
You get so creative to be able to like get that product out and get to where you need to be. And sometimes like, once you have resources, you get a little less creative. Like your fallback is just, oh, I'm going to pay for that.
I think that that's really, really profound, because I would say like the beginning phases of Headbands of Hope were so creative. I mean, mm-hmm. it was like, I would recruit my, you know, college friends to be like campus representatives and put like a fancy name tag on it and just say, hey, go sell headbands and help me, you know, donate them. And then as you get older, again, it's like you just have more information, which can be a good and a bad thing yeah. as to how you run things.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, yeah, I feel like it's that fear of failure is stronger after you've been successful. Like, I think when we started our company, it was just very much like, oh, we should do this. I'm like, okay. It was never in my mind that we could fail or we would fail. Or if we did fail, it was like, what's the harm?
Totally.
But now, like, when we're thinking about our next step, it's not how can this be 100% successful? It's like, what are all the pain points that we see that could possibly make this fail? And yeah. is that what's going to talk us out of actually doing it?
Right.
Yeah. Once you know what it feels like to win, yes. it's really hard to know what it feels like to lose.
Yeah.
And
that is so true.
I totally get that. But, you know, one of the things that I feel like I discovered over the past couple of years as to, like, you know, Headbands of Hope is still a big part of my life, but mm-hmm. I'm not the CEO. I'm not running it anymore. Mm-hmm. I have an amazing team behind it. I've moved on to more Mic Drop Workshop and Bright mm-hmm. Pages. But one of the things that I realized was I always thought that I was going to reach like a point where, you know, I felt like I made it, or, you know, once I can do this, then I'm going to, like, you know, just drink margaritas and call it a day and, like, you know, not challenge myself again. Mm-hmm. Like, once I hit these points. And then you hit them and then you realize, like, that you just start all over again in a new way. And so it's like, it's not really the outcome that I'm chasing. Mm-hmm. It's like the build that I love. And so right. you kind of have to come to look yourself in the mirror and just say, look, like, you love the game. Keep playing it. Stop trying to think about when the game mm-hmm. is going to be up and just enjoy playing in it.
Preach. That is so true. It's like,
that is coordinated.
It is, I know it is hard. And wonderful
yeah.
to have that, like, entrepreneurial spirit, you know, mm-hmm. like, it is really, really hard, but there's literally never an end. There's not a destination. And I think you have to come to the point where you accept that I'm not actually about the destination. I'm literally just about the journey and mm-hmm. wherever it is at the moment.
Totally.
So you, like, hit those wins and you think that's going to be enough, and it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like never enough.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's always something that comes in your mind, something you can make better, some other product you can put out, or like some other great idea that you want to foster. And then for us, I don't know for you, it's always been about, like, how can I scale my OG business or my sophomore business mm-hmm. or whatever it is that allows me the bandwidth and the mental capacity to do my next passion project. Mm. Do you know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And I think that people don't, even when you're a kid and you're told to select what you want to do for the rest of your life, yeah. which I think is crazy. Like, yeah, it's like
17.
I know.
But no one really, I mean, maybe you talk about pay. Maybe you talk about, like, passion. But no one ever talks about lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like, what lifestyle, you know, do you want to have? Yeah. And I think that, like, when it comes to scale in mm-hmm. your business or your whatever it is that you want to do, like, I don't want to have a skyscraper in Raleigh with yeah. thousands of employees that I have to do. Like, I want to live in an Airstream and go in the woods. And
right.
like,
that is very different.
And so when you think about building your business, it's not just about, like, what the financial part is or essentially what you're doing, but it's like, how do you want it to create a lifestyle that mm-hmm. you want to live? Is it, do you want to surround yourself with people mm-hmm. all day, every day? Do you like, you know, being by yourself? Like, what is it? And yeah. so thinking about lifestyle too, I think, isn't really talked about a lot.
I totally agree. And I think, I do feel like this next generation is getting that more correct than our generation. Like, I definitely see those Gen Zers, mm-hmm. like, it's all about lifestyle and it's all about how can this job fit into the life that they want, although sometimes it's very unrealistic what they're expecting.
totally.
Like, that work-life integration, you're like, you're a little heavy on the life and not heavy right. enough on the work.
Well, I think it's obviously a process, yes, but yeah. I'm sure, like, with you guys in being in events, the hours. Mm-hmm.
It is. So they're odd schedules. So it's, yeah. they're all over the place. We have some people that work, you know, Tuesday through Saturday, some that work Wednesday through Sunday, and some that we all have Mondays off, you know, and mm-hmm. it's, they start at 9, but maybe they end at 3 and, mm-hmm. but then their wedding day, it's, you know, 14 straight hours. So it's just, it's very variable. And it's really important for us. Like, in our office culture, it's all about, like, communicating and talking about how you're feeling and mm-hmm. burnout and making sure everyone has the space to recharge and regroup and to feel like they're not coming into an office, but they're mm-hmm. coming into a really fun
community.
Yeah, community.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know,
it's full of messy people.
But I'm really curious. So you talk a lot about, or one of your speaking topics is on attention and success and how they're not codependent.
Yeah.
And so you kind of touched on this a little bit, but like, how would you define success?
So one of the things that I talk about in Chasing the Bright Side is if whatever it is that you're chasing, like the thing that you're going after, whether it's in your business, in your work, in your life, like a goal that you have, if your name was removed from it, if no one knew it was you, would it still matter? And I find that that's a really gut check, you know, because so often we do things based on how they'll look, not necessarily how they'll feel. And we're trained to do that now with social media. It's we are trained to put on, like, what is the perception that people will think of me if I post this, or what do I want people to think of me? And it's like, we have, you know, a front row seat to everyone's like highlight reel or all seeing all their trophies. And so I think that it can really mess with our mind and what we see as success. So for me, if I'm doing something that I don't care if my name is attached to it, and I would still do it anyway, that's success to me. And another thing is, you know, realizing that like a lot of things that we maybe feel like are success can be quantified. Like, you know, maybe you get an award, or maybe your podcast hits a great ranking, or maybe you get, you know, a revenue milestone for your business. And all those things are great and they deserve to be celebrated. But that's what we classify as these achievements, you know, these tangible milestones that show that maybe you're on the right track. But success is something that can't be measured. You know, it can only be felt. And the last thing that I kind of like to think about when I'm a visual person is, you know, I feel like achievements are your own race. Like you are crossing a finish line, and success is a relay. And so I saw, I think it's in Japan, they have like, instead of New Year's resolutions, they have like 100 year goals, which means that they know that they will never be at the end of this goal. Like they will never see, like, you know, Walt Disney never saw Disney World. But if they know that they're using their life to put a foundation in place that betters the future, then that's enough for them, which is like, so
un-American.
Yeah, so un-American. Exactly. But it's like knowing that, like, I don't need to see the outcome to know that it matters. Like, I know that I'm building the bricks. Like, I know that I'm passing the baton. So that's honestly what kind of led me to starting Mic Drop Workshop is like, for so long, my version of success was like, how many books can I write? How many stages can I speak on? You know, how many TED Talks can I give? And I'm like, not only is that formula like limiting, it's also exhausting and it has no ripple effect. And so maybe now my success can be, how many women can I help do that same thing and give them the tools to do that? Because that stretches way beyond than the hours I have in the day. There's a lot to think about when it comes to it, but I would just say removing your name from what you're doing and if it still matters is like the key part.
I love that.
So powerful.
Yeah. I know, like one of the terms, I don't know if it's a term, but like a thought that comes into my mind often, like when I'm meditating or when I'm in the shower or whatever, is that like constant like search for significance. Like I think that there is a universal need for people to feel significant, and like whatever that is in someone else's life may not look exactly how it is in yours, but I like hear this you talking and I'm thinking like, wow, like this is like your journey to significance, like how you're significant and how your legacy is going to move on beyond you. And I think that's so amazing.
Like, oh, thank you. Yeah. Legacy is a really interesting word too, because that is, you know, beyond your, like your lifetime,
right?
And why that matters to you. So I like the word legacy as well.
No, I love that.
I do too. And I think it's really hard, and you're absolutely correct that social media and like where we are in our society makes it really, really, really hard. And it's probably the reasons why I push my kids, my 11-year-old, like, not on it, not, and I don't even know when and how, or we haven't even been to that, down that road, but I fear for that so much for her, because I feel like you do get stuck in this, well, I'm not successful because I didn't go on that great vacation, or I don't have this amazing car, or I don't have XYZ, you know, and it's this comparison. And I think And I love the idea of separating achievement. Like the comparison of achievements is very different than actual like success being a feeling.
Totally.
I think people rob you of that feeling in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I think that for younger generations, it made me think of your 11-year-old, like, and even for older generations, you know, you're trained to think that like, go like find your passion, like see, like discover your passion or like what you were meant to do. And I think that that can be really misleading because it feels like you're going to find something that you love every day and every moment. Or like, if you love what you do, you never have to work a day. And you're like, that's crap.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
I know.
But I think that passion, you know, doesn't have to be discovered. It can be learned, you know, in what you're doing right now and in so many different jobs. Like a lot of people think that, you know, giving back and doing something meaningful means absolutely surrendering any sort of paycheck and, you know, going abroad somewhere and helping people less fortunate, when it's like in events, you know, like I, you know, got married, I had event planners, and it's like the meaning behind making me feel like I was special that day, that I was valued, that, you know, this, my dream was coming true, was like a really meaningful role. And so I think that, you know, passion and like meaningful work is not something that can be like assigned to you or discovered. It can be taught and learned, which is in my experience, I think really optimistic, because that means it's not in someone else's control. It's in ours, you know, like we can learn to be passionate about something.
Well, and I definitely believe that. I mean, even like having been in events for 15, 16 years now, like 2020 was definitely a learning lesson of like how important it is actually for people to gather around whatever, whether it's like a work project, social project, a wedding, a party. Like people need community. And as event planners, like we are fostering that, facilitating that for people. Like it's really a big deal. I think if 2020 taught us anything, it's like celebrate everything, right? Like hug those people when you can hug them, be with them when you can be with them. And it's kind of amazing to be a part of that, whereas previous it's like, oh, we throw parties. I mean, it's fun, you know, we socialize a lot, we help other people socialize, and it just kind of didn't have the same meaning. But even like as life goes on and you experience more things, you can find more passion in what you do. So I think that's totally true.
When we were in the Airstream, there was, I can't even remember where we were, somewhere in Maine, I think. And there was this island that we took a ferry to, and there was not a lot of things on this island, but one thing on this, I had to like double check my Google Maps. I was like, is this right? It was the Museum of Umbrella Covers. And we were like,
Museum of Umbrella Covers?
Covers, not umbrellas, umbrella covers. And we were like, we have to go here. Like I mean, absolutely. This is, 100%. If there's one thing I have to do in my life now, it is go to this museum. And so we went, and it's this woman who one day in like 1990, like realized that she just had this passion for umbrella covers, and that she just thought it was like so interesting that there was this attachment to a product that literally no one uses. And so she had these walls and walls of different umbrella covers, and she had this whole spiel, and it was like interactive, like about like what you think of them and getting your feedback. And there was different themes, but her tagline for her museum, and this one was being on like NPR. I'm like, you are amazing. But her tagline for the museum was celebrate the mundane. And she's like, I don't care if you do like umbrella covers, but like our world does not have to be explosive in order to be exciting. You know, like what, you know, celebrate like everything.
I love that.
And I just think about that all the time ever since I've been there. It's like, like sometimes we're overly stimulated. You know, we have so much access to like TikTok videos or whatever that's like constantly stimulating us, that we feel like maybe our barrier to like, you know, when we're excited is now higher, because, or our threshold. But she just reminded me that like little things can be exciting. And it reminded me, have you guys seen Ted Lasso, or have you been watching?
Love okay. that show.
So I love it. I won't spoil it. But one of the things I saw like Jason Sudeikis say in an interview one time was, you know, the success of Ted Lasso, and I'm like paraphrasing, but the success of Ted Lasso proves that good guys can be interesting, just like ordinary good people. And that's something that has just like stuck with me since that. I'm just like, man, how can I just find a little bit more fun and joy in the mundane?
I have this picture in my house, and it says, it's hardest to love the ordinary things, but you get lots of opportunities to try.
Oh, I love that.
I remember one time I was like doing dishes or something for like the bajillion time that week or whatever. And it was somewhere in the middle of 2020. And I felt a lot of like joy and just like contentment doing it at that moment. And I don't always feel joy and contentment when doing dishes. In fact, it's quite the opposite most of the time.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking at that moment, like this is it. Like a lot of people work their whole life and they work really hard to build this life that they resent or they don't enjoy, like all the aspects of it. Do you know what I mean? And I felt like at that moment, and again, I'm not there all the time. I was like, I'm here. Like I've worked to be here. I'm home with my kids. It was like sometime in the middle of the day, in the middle of the pandemic. And my life was structured in such a way that I could be home doing dishes at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon while I'm in between yelling at my child on a Zoom meeting. You know what I mean? So, but it was just like, I worked to get here.
Yeah.
And it was just like one of those like clarity moments where I just realized that there's a lot of people who work their whole life to build a life that they resent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. I think that the idea that you have to love it all is like so misleading. And so I try to aim for 70%.
That's good. Okay.
I'm like, I just want to love 70% of my job, 70% of my relationship, you know, like 70% of like my marriage. Like I just need 70% of the time. It needs to be good. 30% of it can suck.
Right.
Like,
that's right.
And you know, that's when, you know, if I have employees or something that are like, well, I really don't like doing, you know, this one thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I can't possibly remove everything from your plate that you don't like because, but if it's more than 30%, let me know. Mm-hmm. But if not, then it's just part of the job, you know, like let's roll up our sleeves and do it.
Yeah, I agree. I feel that way. I actually feel that way every time I buy groceries. I know that sounds really weird, but like I loathe putting away the groceries.
Oh, I know what you mean. I'm like that with laundry.
Yes. Once it's all in the fridge and I open up the fridge and I realize like all the food that we have, there is like this overwhelming wash of gratefulness that like I have drawers full of fresh food. I have gallons of milk. Like I think like I want for nothing at this point in my life because I was able just to go to the grocery store and like buy the food that I wanted, recognizing that that's not the case for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's like the one thing that always I feel like centers me into, because I find sometimes like the meal planning and the prep and like getting ready for the week, like it feels like just you're on a hamster wheel and you're just like, I have created this constant like circle of life that I cannot break. Like I cannot get out of. And it's always that moment that I'm like, okay, well, I'm grateful for this wheel right now that I'm on.
Have you read either of you Marie Kondo's Spark Joy?
I have not read it. I've seen the like the show, the Netflix show.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, you know, she says to do is like, obviously hold each item and ask yourself, does it spark joy? And then I was like, okay, but what about like a hammer? You know, like I'm not going to get rid of a hammer, but it's not like getting me super excited. and so she's like, just when you have some product that's mundane that you need, that you can't get rid of, but it's not an exciting product, like just tell yourself, like, what is it that this product helps you do, you know? It's like, wow, like I can hammer in nails. I can build, you know, a shelf with this hammer and remind yourself that you're excited about it or that it has, you know, meaning in your life.
Yeah.
And so in my work, you know, I hate financial meetings. Like anytime that we have to go over spreadsheets or numbers, I just like totally glaze over. And so I find myself now saying, it's like, well, we have financial meetings because there's business that's happening, you know, and stuff to be dealt with because there's action happening in my business.
Right.
And so sometimes it's just these little like cues that you have to give yourself, you know, no matter whether it's putting away groceries or running a company.
Yeah.
You know? I used to think I had this belief that I could one day reach zero problems. Like if I just worked, you know, like, oh, well, on Friday, I'll be done with this speaking gig and I'll feel totally euphoric, you know, and just blissful. And then of course, like an email pops in your inbox that's like, whatever, you know, I forgot to pay this invoice or something like that. And you're like, oh, well, there goes my bliss. And it's like, no, you're never going to have zero problems.
Yeah,
right. If you're actively engaging with the world, then your things will be circulating back. And so if that's the case, then we can't keep delaying joy until we have zero problems, you know? And then sometimes we make changes in our life, like thinking that this change will solve our problems, when really we have to think of changes as like bringing about new problems. And I used to, you know, think like, well, oh, if I am not doing, you know, Headbands of Hope as much anymore, but I'm focusing on Mic Drop Workshop or whatever, then all the problems that I have over here will go away. It's like, well, now mm-hmm. I have, you know, new ones over here. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about like the pivots and the changes of your life is not like eliminating your problems, but like bringing new ones. Would you be excited about those problems?
Oh yeah, totally. It's totally the same vein. Like our September was absolutely nuts. And it was a lot of things I didn't overly enjoy having to deal with, but I had to deal with it. We had to get through. We had some projects we had to get off our plate. And in October happened, and I was like, and I'm looking at my calendar, and my October calendar looks much scarier than my September calendar. Mm-hmm. And I told my husband, I was like, it looks scarier, but I don't feel as stressed, like not nearly as stressed as what I did in September. And he's like, well, that should tell you what you enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I never thought about it. I just thought that this was taking up my time, and everything takes up my time, stresses me out. But you're right. That's not the case. Like I'm really enjoying working on this aspect of our business and growing in this way. Whereas the other stuff a month ago, I was like, I don't want to do it. So it made me more angsty.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it was in Marie Forleo's book, Everything is Figureoutable, where she talked about like two different kinds of fear that mm-hmm. we feel. And there's fear that makes us feel like we'll be constricted. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I won't be able to move. And then there's the kind of fear that is like expansive.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And lean into the expansive fear, not the restricted fear.
Right.
And so I think about that a lot whenever I'm feeling angsty mm-hmm. or fearful, because like, you know, you hear people that are like, fear is good. Or then you hear like, you know, survival of the fittest of like, no, fear is telling you something. Yes, and so it's like, what am I supposed to listen to? Yeah. Am I supposed to listen to fear or not? And so now it's like, if I am fearful or angsty about something that makes me feel like I'll be limited or restricted, mm-hmm. then I'm not going to do it. But if I'm fearful of something because there's so many different ways that it could go, then I'll give it a shot, you know?
No, I do.
That's
love
a really good barometer.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely times, like even like conversations with employees that I have like some sort of like fear of going into, or like I concern or whatnot. Mm-hmm.
And I think you don't know how it's going to play out.
Because I think it is. I am afraid of being like sucked back in. Like I'm afraid of like the restriction. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like you've moved beyond here and you're like, I thought we'd move beyond this. Like I'm going on to here and I thought I put this to bed. And it's that like restriction, like being stuck doing something that I don't want it to do.
Yeah.
Even though I've hired someone to do it, but yet here I am still doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Different kinds of fear.
It's different. It's definitely different. For us, I think one of our, as far as fear and like moving forward and like new things, that is like, I think one of our fears often is I'm moving forward to this. And mm-hmm. even though I have systems in place and people in place, there's always that fear of not fear, like the response, it's going to land on your shoulders.
Oh,
either way,
right,
it's going to land on your shoulders. So we're a little timid, I think, sometimes.
Well, because we still run our businesses. Like we're still like, and we're not in the mix in terms of like, we're definitely taking on more of a managerial role. But at the end of the day, especially when you're talking about events, so you have a client that comes to you and is like, hey, I'm not driving with my planner, right? Mm. And they're upset and something's going on. So your natural inclination is to like, okay, well, I'll take on this event. I will step in because you're the owner, the boss. They trust you. Mm-hmm. They're not going to trust another planner. Mm-hmm. And there is still that aspect of our business that we have to handle. And I mean, even just the other day, like a client was upset about something about the Bradford and they emailed me and I'm like, well, I don't know anything about what's going on with this and why, you know, and so you still kind of get into that role and there is that pressure that, if we start something new,
or you grow too big,
right?
Something's going to fall on you.
The maternity leave, you're going to have a baby and then I'm going to be sucked back into this. And I don't have the passion to do that anymore.
So how do you guys know what is like, yep, I'm going to involve myself in this and what to hold firm on a boundary on?
I think we're still
learning that.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. So absolutely learning.
It's hard to be like, when you have an entrepreneur mindset, when you've been a part of like the zero to, you know, whatever, it's hard to be like 1 foot in, 1 foot out, like involved at an arm's length.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't stop. It's like when you're, I'm sure when, if your kid goes to college or mm-hmm. something, it's not like all of a sudden you're like, you know, done here.
I raised you.
Yeah. Like, here we go. Like off to Hawaii. It's,
what do you mean? That's not what happened.
Yeah.
That's what I'm banking on.
Yeah. I mean, it's still like, I feel, and it's something that I'm working on. It's just like, one of my friends, Kate Rose, now her businesses work well with Kate, and she helps business owners like systemize and automate their business. And she says the best use of your time is doing the thing that you do best. And so I find myself like with Headbands of Hope, I still want to contribute the thing that I do best, which is the storytelling, which is the externally facing, you know, parts of it. I'm not going to be the person that's like, oh, like, well, if our conversion rate is down on the site, then we should really look at the analytics of Google, whatever. And, but I still, when you wear that hat, or I say wear that headband for so many years, it's hard to turn that off, or you want to solve every problem, even though it's not the thing that you do best.
Right.
Yeah. So I kind of just go back to that mantra from Kate. It's like, the best use of my time is doing the thing that I do best.
Yeah.
If I'm finding myself, inserting myself, or involving, like, or being, even if someone asks me, it's like, I have to say, this isn't what I do. This isn't my lane anymore, you know? And hopefully, you know, we have a person that is, and if not, then now we know that's a gap that needs to be filled.
Yeah.
I love that.
That is great. Yeah.
It's easier said than done, for sure.
Is.
Yeah.
It is.
Change my job description.
I know. It is easier said than done, but I think it's wise advice. Cause I do feel that. I feel like there's a lot of times you spin your wheels as an entrepreneur, and and you look at it and you're like, when you quantify it or qualify it, I guess, it's not worth it at the end of the day. Like, it's not worth my time. It's not worth my energy. It's just not worth it. But it's hard to get to that because you want it to be worth it. And you want to be like, I can do this. Like, I should be able to do this. This shouldn't bother me so much. Or,
well, it's really hard because, and I'm sure y'all have experienced this, there are so many seasons to entrepreneurship or growth. And the things that you did in season one, you should not do in season four.
Absolutely.
And so it's like season one, I'm like, whatever it is, I'm going to figure it out. I will learn how to like hard code an email pop-up if that's like what I have to do. And like, I did those things, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know, when you're in season four or five, it's like, do not spend 6 hours trying to hard code an email pop-up when you can find someone to do that for you.
Right.
And so you have to learn, like, when is it time to move on from the practices that served you to the ones that don't serve you anymore? Like, I, you know, remember like a time in my life where it was always like, whatever it is, like, I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to be the yes girl, and I'm going to show up. Like,
that sounds horrible.
Yeah, exactly. And I did that. And then, you know, a lot of great opportunities came from it, and then a lot of wasted time as well. And then now I'm in a phase of my life where, like, usually my gut default answer is no.
Right.
And that's served me really well, where now if my gut default is no, then an opportunity really has to prove itself to say, actually, yeah, like, let me look at that a little bit more. But it was a season that the yes season served me in the past. It doesn't serve me anymore.
Yeah.
So I feel like you also always, as much as you fine tune your business, you have to fine tune yourself in, like, always auditing the things that you used to do. The patterns that served you once might not serve you today.
Yeah.
So you really have to be self-aware. And I think it's awesome that you guys have a partnership too, because you can probably look at a distance a little bit sometimes, you know?
That's true. And I think, and I really love that freedom to say too, that it's just not serving me anymore. Cause I think a lot of times too, when you look at past behaviors and, you know, decisions that we made, like, there's a lot of times you look at that, it's like, oh, that was a mistake.
Right. Or that was wrong.
Right.
Yeah. But it's like, no, it wasn't.
No, but in the moment and in the time, and like we say that all the time about our windows at the Bradford, like, we went from aluminum clad to wood windows cause it saved us like $15,000. And
that we just didn't have at the time.
That we didn't have money.
Yeah,
and so, and now I look, I'm like, oh my God, that was the worst mistake. And I'm like, well, actually, no.
It was the right mistake or right choice
at
the time.
We couldn't do it any other way. Like, there literally was no money there. And so either we had these wooden windows or we had no windows.
I think that's a great example. And like, I think right and wrong is so touchy, you know, it's just like,
so subjective.
Exactly. Yeah. Even like, I've been working with my like life coach on it because I was telling you guys in the beginning, I have it, you know, if someone's supposed to bring the balloons, they like better be damn sure bringing the balloons. And I would get really, I would get really upset at people if they didn't do things like the exact way that I, you know, would want them to do them. And it would get in the way of my work because I'm like, oh, this person, you know, didn't bring the balloons. And she was, it helped me instead of being like, that's wrong. It's like, oh, that's not the way I would do it, or that's not my preference. And it helped me so much to be like, oh yeah, that's just not my preference, but right. it's not wrong.
Right.
Cause then when you say something's wrong, it like almost just like flips the switch oh, in yeah. you, you know, yeah. that can be hard to flip back.
Well, that's just true for relationships in general. I yeah. mean, just
partnerships.
Yeah.
We've literally had hard conversations. Like, I understand that you want things done this way, but like philosophically, we're not meeting here. And philosophically, this is how I would do things. Yeah. And this is how you would do things. And it's not right and it's not wrong.
Right.
But it is different. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to operate. But
it's,
in the difference.
It's creating friction that we need to, that we need right. to get rid of. Mm-hmm. So the question is who needs to adapt
right.
in the way yeah. And at times, sometimes it does feel like if you're the one that has to do all the adapting, mm-hmm. then you're like, well, apparently my way was the wrong way, you know? And, but we, for the
you
most part.
You heard it here, folks.
Yeah. So like, how do y'all resolve those scenarios? Is it like just.
Oh, we're, well, we're sisters.
Arm wrestle.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of arguing. There is some fights, but I think I'm a processor. Like yeah. I feel things deeply. I've always felt that way. It takes me a long time to get through the root of my emotions. Like I saw on Queen of the Day, I was like super emotional, and we had a good friend that passed away last week. And
oh, I'm sorry.
So we've been dealing with that. My daughter like was running in this all county track meet at an eight, like in sixth grade that normally seventh, eighth graders do. So she was running and she's like running towards me, and I'm like, like getting emotional. And I was like, am I about to start my period? Like, what is going on? Like, and I was like, and I didn't know the root of my emotion. And really, mm-hmm. I finally was like, you know what? I'm just emotionally strung out. Like I've been dealing with this death, and we were talking mm-hmm. about the memorial that day. And, you know, and then I was also like insanely proud of my daughter.
Yeah.
And so there's this fear for me a lot of times of saying, are my emotions valid and true, or are they just me being irrational, crazy? Because, you know, those are the voices mm-hmm. inside your head that you've been told your whole life. So for me, when I'm mad at Courtney, I like to process it. Like mm-hmm. I need a moment. Like I'm going to be yeah. mad at you. I'm not going to be lovey-dovey, and I'm not going to be like overly kind, but I'm not going to be like, I'm just going to be like this, like just yeah. very flatlined. And Courtney feels it, and she's like, what's wrong? Mm. I'm like, I'm not ready to tell you what's wrong, because I don't really actually know what's yeah. wrong. I just know I'm annoyed and pissed off at you for some reason, and mm-hmm. I don't know if it's valid.
Yeah.
So you need to give me some time. So a lot of times what happens is she like bombards me, mm. and then it ends up in a big fight, and then we get to the root of it, and then it's fine.
Yeah.
But she's been better.
It's been better.
About giving me my space.
Yeah.
And I'll tell her, and then from my side, I'll say, hey, I don't want to talk about this right now, but let's talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But also I think being clear about like, this is how I like to work. This is mm-hmm. what I need. Or like, this is where yeah. I feel like my pain point is, or this is how I am seeing things right now. It may not be the truth, but this is how I'm interpreting it. Is that the case? Do you know yeah. what I'm saying? And you can yeah. be like, no, actually, that's not the case.
Like you taking some ownership that how you feel isn't necessarily what's actually happening.
And I personally think that that's super important, because I think so many things are like up for interpretation. And I think especially when you're in a partnership, and probably even when you have like a CEO or mm-hmm. Life or a relationship or whatnot, like think about what you know about that person. Mm-hmm. And even though you're feeling this way, do you think that that's their intention? Like, mm-hmm. what do you know? Mm-hmm. Do you ever think that my intentions are to hurt you, or my intentions right. are to do X, mm-hmm. Y, Z, or to make you feel this way? Is it my intention to burden you unnecessarily with all right. the company stuff?
Yeah.
No, that's mm-hmm. not my intention. I've told Dana this before. I was like, so when you're feeling like emotionally spun out about what's going on with us, like get back to like, me, you know
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Is that my intention?
Yeah.
No. At first, the answer is no. And then, but let's talk about what it is that I'm doing that's making you feel that way.
Yeah.
And then it can come from a much less personal space. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I know you.
Yeah.
And I know that this isn't directed in a malicious way towards me, even though I feel that way.
Yeah.
But like, you can work from that point, but right. you can't work from like, you know, you don't care about our company
yeah.
or you don't care about blah, 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 or you're
right.
like all this kind of like irrational S
totally
talks is right. what I call it.
Yeah.
The
always
the worst.
Totally.
Always.
You know? Well, I was listening to this relationship. I think it was like a guy on TikTok or something last night. And he was saying like, try instead of saying to your partner, like, I feel like you burden me with, mm-hmm. you know, the business mm-hmm. stuff. And that's my husband and I have the same, because my husband's yeah. involved in my business too. And he can like literally, it'll be like 9:30 PM and we're like in bed, and he'll be like, oh, we got to pay Q4 taxes tomorrow. Like, good night. And then I'm just like, why would you tell me that? Like, now I'm going to be thinking about taxes. And he just like has such good compartmentalization yeah. to the point where he doesn't realize when things will like spin me out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, if you say, oh, I feel like you burden me with tax stuff before we go to bed, instead of saying that, say what you would like to feel.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to feel like at the end of the day, it's like signed, sealed, delivered. Mm-hmm. And anything we need to talk about can like wait till tomorrow. Or like, I would love to feel like you value me as like a the business partner. Mm-hmm. And because when you say like, I feel this, because I would say that all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I
feel, they tell you to say that.
Yeah.
They always said, use I feel statements.
I know. And now it's like, I would like to feel. Yeah. Because it gives them, oh, what are we aiming for? Yes. Not like, what do you feel? Because the way I feel in a moment can change on a dime without the circumstance changing. Absolutely. Just me changing.
Yeah. Sounds like my husband. He hates I feel statements.
Yeah.
I'll say, he's like, I can't help you then. Like, I can't change how you feel.
Well, it's like saying, you know, oh, I feel cold in this room. It's like, well, you know, that's the way you feel. Yeah. Instead of saying like, oh, I would love to feel warmer in this room. It's like, well, then, okay, now I know that we need to turn up the temperature a little bit.
Yeah, a little more actionable.
Yeah, yes. But I will say that hearing y'all talk, it's like the things that make you guys different and probably the points of contention are also the things that make you operate so well.
Yeah, totally.
And so I used to think that like, oh, if I can just edit my husband to be exactly like me, then we'll take over the world. And I'm like, no, I need someone who is like totally, you know, quote unquote, emotionless around numbers. Like he can just be like, oh yeah, we lost money here. That's fine. We can make money here. Whereas I would be like, oh my God, we lost money somewhere. Like, and you didn't tell me about it.
Can we find it
and,
again?
Yeah, exactly. We'll come back. And he can just be totally like, oh, like no problem, whatever. And I don't want to change him to be like me in that because I need someone like that. Although it drives me crazy sometimes, you know? So it's like the points of differences.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, it kind of goes back to that 70-30. It's like if there's 30% of the time where we might hit friction, that's fine if 70% of it is good.
Yeah, that's probably pretty true.
Yeah.
I would say it's about 70-30.
70-30.
Yeah. It is now.
70-30. Thought we're doing better than that.
It could be. I don't know.
I love that. It feels like therapy, Jess.
No, me too. Yeah. Me too.
I know. Well, we like to ask this of everybody. It's what we call their oh shit moments.
So like, and your whole journey, like thinking about all back, the whole thing could be anything. Yeah. Did you ever have that moment where you were like, oh shit, I'm in over my head. What am I doing?
Oh my gosh. Like 5 minutes ago. Okay, but no, awesome. I mean, I would say that my, like, I actually have a chapter in my book in Chasing the Bright Side called She Made It Work. And it's like 10 stories about just like random shit that like she made it work. But the big oh shit moment was when I was just getting started with Headbands of Hope and I needed a manufacturer for the headbands and found one in Kansas. And I had no idea like anything about manufacturing. And I ended up, you know, they sent me an invoice for like the first round of production. It was $10,000. This was money I did not have at the time.
Because you were in college.
In college. I was like, this is about $9,500 more than what I have in my bank account. And I was talking to my dad about like, I literally Googled like, how do you get $10,000 to business? And it was like, you can get a loan from the bank. You can get an investment, give away equity. My dad ended up being my first investor. He was like, this is a great idea. I'm going to be a part of it, which was, you know, incredible. And I recognize like the privilege that that comes from too. Wired them the $10,000 and never heard from them again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably a lot of tears after that.
Oh my God. I still, what was that like 10 years ago? I still get like so wound up about it when I talk about it.
Like literally I've never heard from them again.
We went to court and we tried to get it back. And it was like at that point the money was gone and we were spending more money in legal fees trying to get it back. And it was like one of those things where we just had to cut our losses and like move on. And it was really hot, like it was just such a gut punch. But I would say, you know, it was one of those things like I hid in the closet for a long time where I was like, I don't want anyone to know that I like messed up so bad. And then when I started speaking one day, I just had a really tough day and I just told that story. And I feel like that was a speech that made me a speaker because it was like telling the honest truth about how I got here and how those moments in our life where we have the oh shit moment, it's a reminder that we can quit too. Like you don't have to do this.
Like you're at a fork.
Yeah, exactly. But I would say that sometimes I feel like we mess up in points in our life that at the time might feel big, but in the long run, it was actually a small mistake that prevented me from making it in a much bigger way in the future. Mm-hmm. Now, like, our purchase orders with suppliers are like six figures.
Yeah,
and
right.
I've learned about 30% deposits and like contracts and all these, you know, things of how we quality control. And I feel like if I had not made that mistake so many years ago, I would have definitely made it in a much bigger way mm-hmm. down the road. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like the windows. It's like, it was the right choice at the time, even though at the time it felt like, what the heck was I thinking?
Right.
You know, but it definitely tested me as to how bad I wanted this and really kind of reassured, like dug my heels in the ground a bit of like, no, I'm doing this, you know?
Yeah.
So here we are.
Wow. I love that.
And eventually I paid my dad back. I was like, woo.
Yeah.
I like, gave him $10,001. I was like, but there's some interest.
I know. I remember that though. I remember like when like a $2,000 mistake would just like wreck us.
Oh,
literally.
Sure.
I remember our very first wedding at the Bradford. We weren't ready. And we told this person we weren't going to be ready, but they insisted on booking and we needed the money. And so we booked them. We should have said no. And they stay, the bride's people stayed in the house and we actually strung the lights because we didn't have lights over our terrace at that point. We didn't have all the landscaping in. Like we didn't have walls in the bathroom stalls. Like we hung these like tarps. My husband like rigged this tarp thing to like separate all the bathrooms. Yeah. And then everyone was fine. Like the night went fine. Caterers are fine. The dad was so happy. And then we get an email like the next couple of days.
Yeah, they were trying to pay the final balance.
They're trying to pay the final balance. And he wanted his room fees back. Like I think it might have been like $400
or something. Yeah, $250.
It was very nominal because there was still dust covers on the smoke detectors from the painting, and like had something happened, his people wouldn't have been safe. Clearly you weren't ready, which we were not ready in many ways. And this is the most minor of the ways that we were not ready. And I remember we were so upset. We were upset about not getting this $250. It just seemed like the end of the world. We were so angry. And then I look back on that day and I'm like,
that's it.
That's all. We should have taken all of that back. Like we were clearly not ready. Can we have a redo of that wedding? You would not imagine what it looks like now.
I mean, I think that you train yourself to like take the stings and they become less and less as time goes on because it's just like shit's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Well, but I think too, like really what developed from that is the ability to say we weren't perfect because I think there is a part of egotisticalness about being an entrepreneur. Like you have to think highly of yourself. Like you have to think that you have the best product, that you have the best this, whatnot. And for us, like we put so much of it into us and we were like, but we did all these things. Like
you believe what we did for you.
Right. Like, but we couldn't take a step back and recognize that there was a lot of truth in what was said, you know? And I think that was the first time we realized that, okay, like we're not going to be perfect. We're going to make lots of mistakes and you have to get okay with saying that I'm sorry, saying, how can I fix this? What can I do to make this better? And sometimes that's going to be a nominal cost, you know, and it's okay to have that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
totally.
But I think it was a hard lesson, but it was one that I think helped us so much in dealing with.
Yeah. It's like you just file it away in your toolkit for how you deal with stuff moving forward. Yeah. And that's just like what it is, you know?
Well, we would love to end on two things. One, we want to know what the most rewarding part of your journey has been. And then...
like, is there a moment that stands out to you?
Most rewarding part.
I mean, besides this, obviously.
Obviously. I mean, you took the words out of my mouth. I would say, I mean, there's countless like hospital visits that, you know, you walk away from it and you're like, this is what I was meant to do, you know? But I would say like, you know, in right now what I'm feeling in Mic Drop Workshop, we have like a closed community that of students who are in the course. And, you know, every day there's someone that posts in there like, I just, you know, had my first speaking engagement at like United Way or, you know, and I just see that. I'm like, wow, something that like I built helped someone do that.
Yeah.
And so every time I see... I think for a while I had a tough time, like in my 20s, like watching other women win, even though I was someone who believed that women should win. It's like I was telling myself that it meant less about me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and now I'm like, oh, it feels so cool to genuinely want women to win.
Yes.
And that's just such a better way to walk through life. Right. Yeah. It's just like, your success is not robbing me of my own. Right. And there's room for everyone at the top. You know,
anything coming down the pipeline? Anything exciting for our listeners?
Well, I guess I could say this. I'm coming out with a children's book, which will be really exciting.
That's exciting.
So that was just signed, but it'll be in 2023.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm excited. And it'll be something along the lines of helping kids create their ideas.
I love that. I love that.
So that's what's in the pipeline right now.
Yeah.
Awesome. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we had enough time today.
I know. So this was great. Thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
Totally enjoyed it. To learn more about Jess and her story, visit jessekstrom.com or follow her on Instagram at jess_ekstrom. To learn more about her organization, visit headbandsofhope.com or follow along on Instagram at headbandsofhope. And for those of you that are listening, Jess has given you one free month of Bright Pages, her online journaling platform. You can go to brightpages.com and use the code GATHER. You can read more about Bright Pages and Jess's other products in our show notes.
And to learn more about our hustles, visit cndevents.com, thebradfordnc.com, and hustleandgather.com, or follow us on Instagram at cndevents, at thebradfordnc, and at hustleandgather. And if you like this show, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
This podcast is a production of Earfluence. I'm Dana.
I'm Courtney.
And we'll talk to you next time on Hustle and Gather.